if a player's really passionate and they really do love the game, their ears tend to listen a lot better than if you're forcing your child or forcing yourself to do something you don't really want to do.
That, ladies and gentlemen, was Kyle Morse from The Golf Room. He was voted Golf Digest's Best Young Teachers in America. He has some experience playing on tour, winning professionally as well, and now returns the favor by teaching juniors and adults alike in Dublin, Ohio, and dropping some serious knowledge for us today on the podcast. So, really excited about what we have to offer with this one, and I hope you guys get a good bit of information from it, because he brings some serious heat in this podcast as we start off the 2019 series of the Junior Golf Blueprint. A couple of things to remember. We have the Fast Approaching Mental Toughness Workshop with Dr. Rob Bell coming up on January 26th from 3:30 to 5:30. If this interests you, please DM me on Instagram or social media at MattWalterPGA, or shoot me an email, MattWalterGolf@gmail.com. We'll get you signed up so you can participate in the great nuggets Dr. Rob Bell brings us. So with that, quick word from our sponsor, and we'll get into the podcast. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, today on the podcast, we have the Kyle Morse from The Golf Room in Ohio. He is a Golf Channel Academy instructor. He's one of the best young teachers in America, and the guy is killing it up in Ohio. He's been a great follow for me on social media. I've already told him that I steal plenty of his drills on a daily basis from what I see in his Instagram stories. So with that, hey, Kyle, give us a little introduction and tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into the game.
Well, Matt, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here and kind of help you and your subscribers out with just kind of passing over some of the knowledge. So as you mentioned, I'm in Dublin, Ohio, just outside Columbus. We're about 2 miles, or not 2 miles, 2 minutes from Mirfield Village, where they have a memorial. And then kind of the backstory is I played, played high school golf, played college golf at Seton Hall, was a ESPN All-American there, and got inducted into the Hall of Fame this past summer, which is pretty neat from just my playing career there. And then went out and played on tour for 8 years, had some success and won 8 times, but just played 40 weeks in 20 countries with 3 kids and a wife, and that was just really hard.
So, no, really?
So turned to coaching, and when I was playing, my swing coach and one of probably my best friend in the world was Mike Bender. And then Stan Utley was my putting coach, James Seekman, my short game coach, and then Pia Nielsen and Lynn Marriott from Vision 54 were my mental coaches. So I thought what I had was kind of the best team assembled on grass. And when I got done, God had a great way of working in the fact that for those 7 years, I was kind of on a 7-8 year mentorship with them, quite frankly, because I remembered everything they ever said. So when I was able to hit the ground running and teaching, it was pretty seamless for me in a sense. So I started teaching in 2016, and as you mentioned, got ranked by Golf Digest as Best Young Teacher in America twice, which was really fun and a blessing. And then I basically opened a full coaching facility, an 8,000 square foot facility in Dublin, Ohio, where we have 6 track bands, and we've got body track to measure ground forces, and K-motion to measure the body, and focus band to measure the brain, and heart math to measure your heart. And then I do the swing side along with a couple instructors that work beside me, kind of helping implement the plans that I'm laying out for these junior golfers and just amateur golfers in general. And then we have Lindsay Becker, who's a top 50 Golf Digest trainer. She was the trainer for the President's Cup, and Jason Day, Luke Donald, a bunch of players on tour. And then we also have Dr. Todd Case. He's our sports psychologist and mental performance coach. And kind of the backbone with kind of fits well with this podcast is we have an elite junior academy where kids are with us 12 hours a week working in this 8,000 square foot facility, working on their game, working on their body, working on their mind. And then we also have college recruiting with Second Nine Consulting and Rich Brazzo. So we kind of like to surround the player with everything they need to be the number one junior golfer, collegiate golfer, or tour player in the world. So, and just kind of walk beside them and love them and encourage them and see how good they can get.
Yeah, it sounds like you developed the mecca of golf instruction is what it sounds like to me. I mean, that sounds awesome. And kind of to your point, though, I think with the coaches you put around yourself as a player, all four of them I check off as people as the gurus of each in their own categories. Like you had them.
Yeah, they're kind of yeah, I always thought they were the best of the best in their specialty, right? So, you know, when I was able to start coaching, it allowed me to be a little piece of each one of them, you know, to kind of create a full encompassing view of the game.
So let me ask this question, because I was actually having a chat with James Hong last night, and it was kind of an interesting little conversation we were having about note taking and things like that. And when you were a player and you had the opportunity to work with these kind of coaches, and obviously it's influenced your ability as a coach now, what were you doing to keep those nuggets of information that they were giving you kind of like in the back of your mind? Obviously they were applying information as it was to you, but you know, I'm sure you picked up nuggets that were applicable in other areas for your students you got now. How did you kind of like store that information, or what did you do to kind of really hang on to those little tidbits?
Well, one of the things that's kind of, this isn't the answer that we're looking for, but especially with kind of who's listening to this, some of it is, to be honest, is some mental maturity. Meaning when I was like 23, 24 working with those guys and my livelihood's on the line, they said it one time and it stuck in my brain like glue. And I think I have a really good memory as it is. So it stuck there, and that's harder for a 16-year-old to do just because of the mental capacity of how their brain is formed, right? It's harder for them to do it, which is why we tell these junior golfers 9 gazillion times, like, stop aiming right. For God's sakes, just aim at the target. So there's that, right? But we try to get a lot of our academy kids and regular kids and junior golfers into the habit of journaling. So we use a program also like called Coach Now, where we film throughout the lesson and give them, you know, like we'll kind of put the camera in their face and tell them what they're experiencing and how they're feeling it in their body and their brain and all that kind of stuff. But we like to close every hour out with what we're doing, and I'll close it off about 7 minutes early, 6 minutes early, and send them into our mental performance kind of room, and you know, everybody carries a black moleskin where they got to write some things that they experienced, because I'm going to expect them to come in and say, hey, where did we leave off yesterday or whatever. I mean, I'm teaching, you know, 70, 90 kids a week. So as much as I try to, you know, it's hard for me to keep tabs on every single drill and sensation and thing that we're doing. So, you know, my ultimate goal for the player is for them to become their own coach myself out of a job, and make them so that they don't have to come to me anymore. Right. Cause in college golf, especially, it's really, really hard, Matt, because college coach, like with the way the scheduling is, you're not coming home to get a lesson. Like, you're barely going to be able to have a chance to practice in a sense, because a lot of college coaches gear more towards competing and doing games on the range, and like, but it's not so much of skill. It's a lot of skill development, but it's not a very much of, in my opinion, there's a little bit of a disconnect, and mostly because it's not really their job of technique building.
Yeah.
So my goal is to make it to where when a player's dude does have an hour and they're working on TrackMan or they're working at their video and they can see their swing on video, they know what they're looking for. And then consequently, how to set up a proper practice station so that they know what they need to change and how to change it. Right. So definitely. If I'm texting a player and saying, hey, what's going on? And they say, hey, I'm, you know, my swing direction and my club pass getting a two left, you know, and I'm kind of swiping it. And I say, well, what's causing that? They go, well, you know, my hands are too high at the top and I need to get a little bit more depth. And yeah. I go, so what are you going to do that? And they go, well, I'll just kind of put a shaft over my right shoulder so I can get a little bit more behind the golf ball. And I go, great. So like, how's your girlfriend? You know,
no,
so
man,
like those conversations should ideally last about a minute and a half. I would venture to say that a lot of the golf room players, they can teach some pretty gnarly lessons just because of how much they really get into like how it all correlates with one another.
No, I mean, that's great. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like, I got a chance to watch Breed give like a presentation. He talked about Socratic teaching, which is kind of like what it sounds like you're doing and kind of what I do myself. It's like, instead of just giving them answers, you just kind of turn it right back around on them, ask the question, but leading the question in the direction of the answer you want them to give. And then next thing you know,
yeah, the player needs to know why, right? I mean, yeah. They've got to know, because I get them to know the why. You know, I try to teach the lesson in three phases of a description, demonstration, performance. So I need them to describe what's happening and why it's happening and what's the cause and what's the effect, just with words. Then they need to be able to demonstrate it at a slower speed so that they can actually sit in their living room in front of a mirror and do it correctly. And if you blot out their face, you don't know if it's Tommy Fleetwood or John Joe, right?
Right.
And then that's the demonstration phase. And then finally they get into the performance stage where they can start to build it with a little bit with slow speed. And then over the course of time, get 1% better a day and just kind of chip away with it over the course of, you know, 6 to 12 to 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's right. I mean, I like that 1% better. I mean, I think that's something that for a kid to walk away with is big because, you know, right, you were talking about mental maturity earlier. 14, 15, or 16 year olds, I mean, how many times do you see the kid get frustrated because he's not perfect, right? And like, that's the hardest pill to swallow.
Right? It's hard nowadays because we live in a culture of instant gratification. So everything we want, especially the, what are they? The Generation Z, I think they're called.
I'm losing track.
Generation something, but
I think that's right.
You know, everything we want right now, we get it now, right? If I want the news, I get it now. If I want the weather, I get it now. If I want to see what my friend's doing, I go to Instagram and see, right? So everything's now. So golf is great because it's a game of life where nothing in life comes easy, right? If it came easy, it's not worth fighting for. So the whole goal is that you're trying to make it to where the kid's just kind of chipping away and putting, you know, kind of pennies in the jar. And over the course of, you know, you put a penny or a nickel into the jar every day over 20 years, that accumulates a nice little pot of wealth where you can buy something really nice. But I think there's this idea, just not amongst junior golfers, but then in amateur golfers, where they think that now that I know I'm over the top and I can swing right, like I can go do that and do it at 110 miles an hour under pressure on the 18th tee to win an AJGA Rolex Tournament of Champions. And that's just not realistic. You know, we like to tell people that, you know, if I'm working with a tour player, like I got a tour player I talked to, you know, we had a kind of an interview conversation that, like last year, and he was saying, you know, what's kind of the process? And it was kind of like, hey, it's about two and a half years to really master it, like top to bottom. But at the same time, it's not like you're getting worse over the 2.5 years or staying stagnant. You're trending 1% every day. And over the course of, you know, if I could increase my business 1% in sales every day over the course of a year, that'd be pretty good.
Yeah, it wouldn't be terrible at the end of the day, that's for sure.
So, and I think that's a lot more manageable goal for the player to wrap their mind around, like, hey, can I go and practice today and bring my best so that I can just get 1% better? And then at the end of the day, you can walk out, and however you've been designed to be, it's kind of, you know, at least you can get, it's kind of like going for a high score. It's kind of like going to a test, right? You can go into a test and be underprepared and say, you walk out of the test, you get a D, and you just go, I probably should get a D because I didn't study. It's another thing to be able to walk out and you look at your mom and dad in the face and say, I got a D, but I studied for like 11 hours. And I did like the best I could do. And that's, you know, it's just really hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think as parents, that's really what we're wanting for our children, is we're just wanting them to grow up with great work ethic and be, you know, men and women with character and virtue, where we can say like, hey, you know, my kid's giving everything they have. And sometimes God designs us to shoot 62 and sometimes God designs us to shoot 75. It's just, you know, where's your skill set is, but just growing to their passion for the game so that they want to work at it, right? I mean, that's really the difference, going back to that first question, Matt, that you said, was if a player's really passionate and they really do love the game, their ears tend to listen a lot better than if you're forcing your child or forcing yourself to do something you don't really want to do.
Yeah,
you know, Tom Lehman was a buddy of mine, and he was said to me once, he goes, you know, Kyle, you're playing for a living. And how many hours a day do you spend on the course? And I go, like, you know, 9-10 hours. And he goes, don't you think you should be pretty happy when you're doing that? And I go, yep, that's a pretty good point. If it was making me miserable, I could go do something else. Go pick up badminton or something.
That's just it. I mean, golf is such it's kind of an isolationist sport a little bit too, because you against yourself. And, you know, there's no real team. You can't, you know, lean on your quarterback or your wide receivers to pull you out of a situation. It's, you know, it's on yourself. And that's kind of, that's more the reason why I fell in love with the game, was because I got tired of going and playing sports and, you know, having a good game for myself and then win it or losing, and then, or having a winning game and be mad at myself because I had a bad game. And then with golf, it was just equitable. You know, the time I put into it was what I got out of it. And if I put in the right amount of time with the right amount of work, I saw results, you know, and maybe it didn't come right away, but at the end of the day, it showed up.
Right.
So I love that. So talk to
us. That's the nice part about the academy setting for us. I mean, we do everything. Like, you don't have to be an academy member for us to work with you. I mean, I'm teaching lessons from 10 to 2 and or 10 to 3, and then the academy comes in 3 to 6, and then we go back to teaching till 9 p.m., and we teach regular people on the weekends and stuff like that. But the academy's nice because it creates a group environment where, you know, iron sharpens iron, and we're walking beside one another and kind of pushing one another, right? So, especially we find that a lot, not to be I don't know what the right word is, but girls seem to really like that environment because it's hard to practice by yourself.
Yes.
But if you can make it a little bit more where it's a social scene, and you can kind of, you know, grind really hard for 20 minutes and then take a minute break and, you know, shoot the breeze and then grind really hard and then shoot the breeze and then grind really hard and then shoot the breeze. So that's the nice part about that environment.
Well definitely. That's what I was going to ask you about your junior programming, because, you know, like I said, I follow you on social media and I'm watching what you're doing there. And just recently, the last couple of years, I started instituting more of this pod light training where you have 6, 7, 8 kids at a time, you know, doing drills, competing against each other and, you know, and all that great stuff. So tell us a little bit more about how and why you set up your junior program the way you did. And obviously you're having great results with it. So tell us a little bit more about how you're doing that.
So one of the things is the fact of accountability, is we wanted to create an environment where the kid, quite frankly, it sounds kind of bold, but our kids in the academy, you're either going to get really good or you're going to quit, right? Because the way that we train, especially with the feedback training of like the swing. So let's go back to the idea of the guy's arms are lifting. Like if we put a stick over your shoulder, you're either missing the stick or you're not. You're not going to sit there for 6 months and keep hitting it, right? So we create the environment and the practice station to where if they're doing motor pattern training, they're going to have to change, right? So we make it to where you have to swing it exactly like Justin Rose. And then you kind of figure out where the ball is in space. So we make it to kind of where we create the environment where the kid's going to come in, he's going to learn how to, you know, he or she's going to learn how to properly practice, where they're going to kind of dive into their motor pattern, you know, 2-3 days a week for an hour. Then we're going to create some competition skill building stuff, you know, where they're competing against another academy member. They're going to work out with Lindsay and her other trainer that works under her, Zach, working on the body and speed and all of the biomechanics in regards to that 2 days a week. And then we create the environment for the mental training. So, you know, the player, if I say to anybody, and it's just, it's not anybody specific, but if you just say to the kid, hey, I need you to visualize yourself winning 15 minutes a day, 3 days a week. And if you do that, you're going to win 3 AJGA events. Even if you do that, the player just won't do it because the mental side's really hard, right? It's hard when you're home because, you know, you can pick up Snapchat and like you can watch Netflix and there's just so many distractions in this world. So we create the environment where we said, hey, you're going to go in the front and we're going to give you like 15 minutes of just quiet solitude where you can actually do this and not be distracted. Right. So it's really creating the environment where these kids are kind of giving up 12 hours of their week to really improve their skill set and their craft. And then they can go home and do their homework, which is really interesting. Everybody in our program's GPAs actually improve, which is amazing because of the fact
that it goes to your skills.
We ripped it out in life, but it's because they learn the quality of time management, right? So, and it's really creating them and preparing them for college golf, which is just that, right? I mean, at Seton Hall, I had no time to do anything, quite frankly, which is a whole nother question, right? Which would be good to kind of talk with Rich about sometime about the scheduling of Division I, Division II, and Division III golfers, right? I think a lot of people say, everybody says, I want to play Division I golf, which is great, but I don't think that a lot of people understand what is entailed in that. You know, I mean, it's a lot.
It's big. I teach next to the Vanderbilt University, so where the both men's and women's team play and practice, and yeah, it's no light schedule, man. I mean, you're on the road 5-6 times a semester.
Yeah, you're going from 5:30 in the morning till on school days, you're basically going from 5:30 in the morning till 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, it's tough.
Every minute is accounted for, which is great because, like we talked about before we got on this podcast, that's the way my life is. I mean, I have every minute of my life is planned, quite frankly. You know?
Well, like, I think that just kind of goes to why you're having success with your kids too, right? I mean, you're talking about how they're having better GPAs as well as their golf games. I mean, you know, you already know what it takes to be successful. You've reached the professional level, was able to play on the tour and at the professional level. So you scheduled your life around that, and you found a way that made it work. And so now you're able to instill those foundations into your juniors, right? And I talk to a lot of my kids. It's like, you know, your parents employ me to make you a better golfer, but they're also employing me to make you a better person. And at the end of the day, if you're a better golfer, that's great, but hopefully we're taking away a little bit more than just getting good at a sport.
Yeah. I mean, we give assessments in our online programming stuff. We give assessments built upon character, not just golf, but like, you know, based upon responsibility and critical thinking skills and all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you too, because I saw that portion of your programming where you do a new player assessments. What all goes into that new player assessments, and how do you use that material to build a plan for your student?
So basically at the beginning of the academy, we set out, we do 2-3 hours of assessments where we will we'll do a ball striking assessment. We'll do a short game assessment. We'll do a mental combine assessment, figuring out, you know, just basically kind of diving into their brain. We'll do a personality test. We do a K-motion evaluation, figuring out how their body moves in space. We do heart rate testing, figuring out how well they control their heart rate under pressure. I mean, we kind of, quite frankly, there's not a body part we don't look at, frankly. And then we sit down as a team of coaches, outline a plan of how, what we're going to do over the course of the 6 months. You know, what are we going to do on a day-to-day basis to improve those certain assets of your skill, mind, and body? And then get to work, right? And then we just lead the kid to water, and he comes in, and we kind of encourage him and love him and walk beside him, and hopefully, you know, we lay out the plan, and then, you know, they're implementing it, right? So, which we're here to help them and make sure that they stay on it, right? So we're going through them, and we're with them all the time. So we like to keep the pods, as you were using as the word pods, we like to keep them pretty small. So it's kind of a 3-to-1 coach ratio at max, to keep the quality high. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there's certain times where the players by themselves, and you're hoping that you're just encouraging them to stay really paying attention to their intentions when they're doing that. So,
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, that's kind of the big thing there with that is, you know, you got to have a little bit of the, you know, I'm going to hold your hand through this part, but at the same time, you got to know how to do this on your own. And I think, you know, as a coach, that's part of, you know, what we have to be able to do is, and to your point already, where you're saying your students could even teach golf is, you know, if we're not giving you the right tools to be able to build your own craft. And, you know, it's funny, like we were, I was doing an assessment with some of my players before we started our winter program with putting, and just to humor myself, I was asking all the kids, like, how long is your putter? And, like, 3 of them knew the actual length of their putter. All the other ones were guessing. I was like, you know, this is one of your tools. Like, you probably want to know, like, you want to know the details about your tools. Like, how long your clubs are, what they are, what lie they are. You know, I'm like, that's part about knowing your craft. So, tell us a little bit more about, I know you're kind of partnered with, but, and I'm kind of excited to maybe connect with you about this, is the Second Nine College Recruitment and Consulting.
Yeah.
How'd you get involved with that? And, you know, what are they doing that helps you as a coach and help your players?
So Rich was actually one of my, Rich Brazo owns Second Nine Consulting. He's one of 4 AJGA college advisors. And then, like I was saying, him, myself, well, the golf room, I should say, him, and then the guys down at Sea Island, Dr. Morris Pickens, Randy Myers, and Daniel Gray down at Sea Island Golf Performance Center, kind of became the official coaches of Junior Golf Scoreboard. So, basically, we use Rich for a lot of our players sign up with Rich for the recruiting side. And it's important because, unfortunately, with the way budgets are with college programs, you kind of have to, with college golf, you kind of have to recruit yourself, quite frankly, right? Unless you're really good, right? If you're like top 200 in the country, then you don't have, you know, call, you know, you can do whatever and just keep shooting scores and they'll find you. But with, for most juniors, right, the higher percentage of them, you have to kind of put your proposal together, lay out your plan to the college coach, show them why you're different, because that's really what it's about, right? I mean, you're trying to figure out how you're going to separate the kid who's ranked 300th in the country from 390, right? I mean, scores look pretty similar, but that's where like character and work ethic and having plans and all that kind of stuff comes together. So he helps a lot with just trying to narrow the schools of what they want to do. Cause a lot of times we find junior golfers, it's kind of like in the state of Ohio, right? It's like, where do you want to go to school? It's like Ohio State, University of Cincinnati, or Dayton, or like Toledo. They, if you say a school like Colgate University, which is a really high academic school in Pennsylvania, they're like, I don't even know what that is. You know? Yeah. So they only know, like, if it's, are they in the BCS, have they made the football playoffs before? I mean, those are the schools they know. But if you say like a school like Lipscomb, they go, yeah, I don't know what that is. Where are they at?
Right. Well, I mean,
to open up their eyes so that they can see some other schools and get in, how to conduct interviews and with the college coach and ask the right questions and all that kind of stuff.
No, that's
which are good, just life skills, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of the whole premise of this, right? Is that in golf, there's so many ways you can take what you've learned in playing this game to life. And I mean, you know, you shank a wedge doesn't mean you can't hit a great chip shot the next go around, right? You know, you make a bogey in your business doesn't mean you can't come around and still have a good quarter. So there's definitely a lot of life lessons to be taken from it. But I like what you guys are doing with the recruitment phase of it, because that's I'm dealing with one of my kids right now. It's like I'm having to beat him upside the head to like say, you need to text a coach, tell him three times you're going to call him, you know, on a certain day so that, because he can't respond to you yet. But if you tell him, hey, I'm going to call you these three times and you happen to pick up, you know, like.
Right. And I think that's the thing is, you know, like I try to walk and help my students as much as I can. Right. And I mean, I certainly can help, but at the same time, I'm pretty good at college recruiting and I know college coaches and I know how to go through the process and stuff, but I'm really busy with like teaching you how to swing it good.
Yeah.
Right. And then Lindsay's knows the college recruiting, but she's really good with building the body. And then Todd's really can do the college stuff, but he's really good with building the brain. And then so it's kind of, and then Rich is like really good with the college recruiting and could kind of dabble in the swing side. So instead of us trying to play like, you know, like a Swiss Army knife and do everything, we just say, hey, I'm really good at this, so let me do that and you do that, and then we'll talk and we'll get everybody working in one unified direction and just kind of surround the player with the team, which is the same thing we do for a PGA Tour player, right? So, you know, I was in Sea Island last week and we had a meeting of like eight of us together going over the year for the guy.
I mean, and that's what it's become, right? I mean, it's crazy what at the professional level, like in the last, I mean, I would probably say just 20 or 30 years, how we've gone from like a swing coach or two to like a team. And you hear Jordan Spieth talk a lot. I mean, Jordan Spieth probably the one that's most known for it, because he'll say, you know, we did this, we did that, referring to as a team and not just what he did. And I think that speaks a lot to his
right.
But, I mean, as far as – and I know we got to get rolling here in a few minutes, but tell us a little bit more about what you – when you work with a tour player, just for some of the kids that are in college and they're thinking about, you know, moving up into that realm, what do you think are some of the biggest changes that when you're going from college to playing on a professional circuit that these kids need to start preparing themselves for?
Well, quite frankly, first is the amount of money involved. So, I mean, what my opinion is to play like a decent play a good schedule, be able to see your coach when you want to see your coach, travel when you want to travel, get like, if you feel like you're getting hot at the right time, being able to fly to a web.com qualifier and all that kind of stuff. You know, you probably need about $60,000 to $80,000 a year if you're going to do it right. You know,
man.
So, I mean, you can do it for 30 or 20, but like, you know, you're going to be eating lots of Subways and shacking up with three guys through a room and kind of having to cut things out of your budget that you want to do, right?
Yeah.
So first is the amount of money. Two is the fact that it's now just you. So you don't have someone, you don't have a college coach there to be accountable. So, you know, basically my schedule as was the schedule, like I'll just use Michael Thompson as an example of last week. And my schedule when I was playing was the same. So last week we woke up at 5:30 in the morning. We were at the gym at 6. We worked out with his trainer till 6 to 7:15. We went to we showered, got done at 7:40. We were at breakfast at 8. We ate till 9. Then we got to the Frederica at 9:15. We worked on the range till 12. Then we ate with me and him and Zach Johnson and some guys till 1 o'clock. Then we chipped till 1:30, warmed back up till 2, played golf till 4, went back to the range at 5, went more chipping till 6, back to the gym at 6 to 7, showered, went to dinner at 7:30, had a meeting with his team till 10:30. So that was my normal day minus the meeting at night.
Man.
So when a kid comes to me and says, "Oh, I practiced like 2 hours in the last week," goals, I go, "Great! So you just did like a half of my morning in one day," and you're expecting this to be different.
Well, it's funny,
you know. So
I did this,
and this.
Good.
I think that Matt, like the slogan, you know, we kind of leave with these quotes, you know, and I think two world quotes that I like to live by. Is one is the 1%, right? Like you just got to get 1% better. But I think there's a lot of value in the second one. And I don't even know where I heard it. I don't know if I heard it somewhere, if I just thought of it or whatever, but I'm probably not smart enough to think about this one or make this one up. But it's kind of the fact that everybody wants to be great. Like no one wants to suck. They say, "Hey, do you want to be good?" Everybody says yes. So everybody wants to be great, but when it's time to be great, no one wants to do what's required.
Yeah, I mean,
like no one wants to do the tedious, hard-working stuff that's necessary to be great. And everybody's like, "Yeah, I want to be an All-American." You know, no one ever says, "Hey, I think I just want to be mediocre."
That's right. Well, that's kind of like what Eric Thomas preaches out on his on all of his platforms. Everybody wants to be a beast until it's time to do what beasts do. You know, and it's very similar in that sense. And I think you're right. It's humorous to me about what you were talking about with the tour player schedule when your kids come up to you, because this year in my program, I'm having my kids record how much time they practice each week and then submit it to me. And, you know, like one kid who wants to play pretty high level sent in his hours. And I was just kind of like, you realize that's like a good week for your month that you turned in? Like your month was one
right.
Week for a tour player. I'm like, just throwing that up there, chew on that for a minute, and we'll talk about it again.
Right.
That's good stuff, man. Well, I appreciate it. Before we go, because I know you got to run and teach a bunch of players and make everybody better, give us a couple ways to reach out to you, and if there's any other things you want to throw at us that, you know, knowledge of information or things you got coming up for the people that might be out in Ohio listening, where are some ways to reach out and get a hold of you?
Yeah. So I think the best way to kind of follow what we're doing is just follow us. You know, we're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The Instagram account is kind of like the header or the leader to all those three. So if you follow the Golf Room on Instagram or Buckeye Golf Performance, that's kind of the physical side, and follow our handle there. We give some really good tips every night, every evening. I try to give out a little something and kind of cut your handicap in half just by the Instagram account side. And then, you know, we have a thing called the Experience and just kind of a player development program for the academy, for obviously for the people. You know, we've had kids that have moved here to do it and all that kind of stuff. But we also just have something where a kid can come in for 2 days and book all three of us coaches out. I mean, and basically kind of lay out the plan of what we're going to do. And you can either take it back to your home coach and kind of say, "Hey, here's what they found and here's what they recommend. Let's see if we can try to implement this." And you walk beside me in doing it, or you can kind of go back home and do it on your own, and send us online videos and kind of do coaching remotely. So, and then you can go to our website at thegolfroom.com as well. So, so those are kind of the ways to take your next steps, I guess, in a sense.
That's awesome, man. Well, hey, look, I appreciate all your great insights, and you really brought it today for us. So I do thank you for that. And I know it's you got a busy day ahead of you, so go out there and fix them one swing at a time, Coach.
Thanks, buddy. I'll see you. Thanks so much.
And that concludes our first episode of 2019. Well, I hope you enjoyed the information Kyle Morris brought for us today. It was really insightful. Man has a lot of talent. Obviously, his Golf Digest voted him best young teachers in America. And he produces a lot of good quality players out of his golf room. So, if you want to follow him, you can follow him on Instagram, The Golf Room. And it's worth a while. He has a lot of great nuggets he puts up there for free. So, I'd check that out if I was you guys. Again, one last reminder, Rob Bell's Workshop, January 26th, 3:30 to 5:30. Email me, mattwaltergolf@gmail.com. Also, if you'd be so kind, go to the app store that you listen to this podcast on and leave us a 5-star review and write a little feedback for us down there at the bottom. We greatly appreciate it. It helps boost our ranking. So with that, signing off the first episode, and I have a whole bunch of other great ones coming to you guys here in the near future, as I have a lot of great coaches lined up already for just starting off our 2019 season. So thank you for all the follows and listens, and make sure you subscribe so you keep up with what we're doing. Talk to you soon.